Welcome to Your Detour, a podcast created to inspire those navigating their career journeys. James and I started this program because of our own journey. Our goal is to provide motivation and drive through interviews with others that didn't have the standard promotional outcome to success. We hope you find these discussions helpful to forge ahead your own obstacles, strive for happiness, and value-driven outcomes. Come along this adventure with us and subscribe to Your Detour on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and YouTube.
All right. Welcome to another episode of the Your Detour podcast. Today we have Austin Belsack. Thanks for joining the show today. How are you?
I'm doing great, Jim. It's great to be here with y'all. I'm so excited that you're doing this show and I hear it's going well. So I'm super pumped to be included and thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we kind of owed it to you after, you know, how we came to be in our relationship where Austin played a pivotal part in my change as far as going from medical device into software. With his system. And I think it's interesting because a lot of what he does helps people get into positions that maybe they don't have the experience for and not going through the typical application process where you're just applying online. And in my case, I'm glad I came across him on one of his webinars because I was just kind of getting into this place. I was sick of applying online and I was just accepting that I was comfortable. I'm like, I'm a product expert. I know my stuff. I'm comfortable. So forget it. But thankfully, came across Austin in that webcast and got into his system, was held accountable, and here we are today. So Austin, again, gave you a little shout out on the first episode we did, and again, I just appreciate it more than you know, and so excited to have this conversation with you today. So with that, if you wouldn't mind, just opening up a little bit about yourself and kind of how you got here and founding Cultivated Culture.
Yeah, for sure. So I think, you know, to kind of capture all that in a nutshell, starting with where we're at today, I run Cultivated Culture, as you mentioned, which is essentially a business that's geared towards teaching people how to be more effective in the job search. So we specifically focus on a lot of folks who are looking to get into a new role with a non-traditional background, and we teach them how to do it without that traditional experience and also without applying online. That's a really big core component of our system is leveraging relationships, referrals, and creative ways of illustrating your value that are more authentic to you than just churning out online application after online application. And essentially, my friend Madeline Mann, she calls it hitchhiking through your job search. So you kind of stick your thumb out and you hope that a company will pick you up.
That's perfect.
Yeah, no, I always borrow it and I have to give her credit. But it's so accurate because our careers are so important. Like they dictate so much of our lives and the quality of our lives, but so many people effectively leave it up to chance, hoping that a company comes along and scoops them up and will actually be great rather than taking control and saying, okay, let me go find companies that are great. Let me understand what greatness means. Like, what are my values? What matters to me? How can I seek that out in a company? How can I understand that? And then how can I go about getting in the door? How can I take control and be intentional about this? So that's a lot of what we focus on. And we have a community of a little over like 1.25 million right now across platforms, which has been a lot of fun to build. And we've helped people get in the door at, if you can think of a company name, you know, we've helped somebody get in the door there at this point. So that's what I do now. But to rewind, the step before that, I worked at Microsoft for 5 years. So I came in as a partner manager. I came through a transition from med device, Jim, which you're familiar with, obviously. And I was there for 5 years. I went from partner manager to director of partner development, got promoted 3 times, you know, along the way there. And really the business Cultivated Culture stemmed out of my landing a job there. So taking a step even further back in college, I had no idea what I wanted to do. The job that I landed in medical device sales basically fell into my lap. I had terrible grades in college. I failed a bunch of courses. I was totally lost. All of my friends know this about me. So then I get this job at Microsoft and all these folks from college are coming out of the woodwork and they're like, how the heck did you do this? So after the 20th person messaged me about it, I decided to write a blog post about it and see if the stuff that I'd learned through this process would be useful to other people. And it really resonated from the amount of views that it got, shares, the messages that I got. And I just figured, well, let's see if there's something here. So I spent the next couple of years building it from 5 to 9 p.m., so to speak, while I was working at Microsoft full time. So that's a little bit about the backstory, but I'm totally happy to go much deeper into any aspect that you all are interested in.
Well, I think what's interesting is that I love that you mentioned your grades in college, because everyone thinks that if you get straight A's, you'll get at the top three schools and get your MBA and or these companies, when grades, I mean, in my personal opinion, mean shit. I mean, listen, I talked about this in the last episode. I was a business major and I came home crying at my end of my second year because I got a D minus in accounting. And I'm like, my brain does not work like that. And I know I'm smart. Like, I know I'm educated and I know how to problem solve. So I actually started college all over again. So when I hear people say about grades and they didn't do well, I'm like, you know what? That doesn't actually tell you your qualifications as a person. It just tells you that you know how to memorize and take tests. So I love that you mentioned that. And thank you, because I'm sure others have heard that and or that people think that they're not qualified because of their grades. I actually am really interested in learning about your leap from Microsoft to Cultivated Culture. So I know that you just said you've been on there a couple years doing after the 9 to 5. Well, we talked to several entrepreneurs and that leap to actually doing it is freaking scary, right? So tell us a little bit about that day that you're like, I'm putting my notice in, I'm doing this.
Yeah, it was really interesting. It wasn't even a day, more so than it was a period of time. But essentially, I had been working towards this forever, even before I had a job in any capacity. Even when I was a student, I had wanted to be an entrepreneur. And going back to the piece about grades, one thing I could never really wrap my head around was being forced to take all these classes that didn't really seem to have any tangible, tangible results or tangible value for when I left college. And I am totally on board with let's get a well-rounded education. Let's be exposed to all these different things. What I'm not into though is, oh, we're also tying a grade to this that impacts your GPA, which impacts your ability to get jobs and all these other things. Like that doesn't really make a whole lot of sense to me. And so I got really, really frustrated with that. And I said, I don't ever want somebody to be dictating what I'm doing, what I'm working on, what I'm focused on. And I also historically had, I think like the principals in school called it like a problem with authority, if you will, but essentially.
I don't see that at all, Austin. I don't.
If people were telling me that I had to do something, my brain automatically went into like, I'm not going to do this, or vice versa. Like if you told me I couldn't do it, my brain automatically was like, oh, I'm going to go do that. Like that sounds great now. And so the whole kind of corporate structure was really tough for me to adapt to because, Nomiki, to your point, like you knew you were smart, but your brain wasn't working this way. And I felt that way about school, about the first job that I had, about so many things in life where I knew what I could do. I knew what I was capable of, but I kept finding myself in these situations where I wasn't able to tap into those strengths or the things I was excited about. And that was so frustrating to me. And so I always had this dream of creating an exit plan and jumping ship and going off and doing my own thing. But the interesting thing I would say is that when I was early in my career, I was working these jobs that, you know, they were whatever. Like I was working in med device sales. That was my first job out of college. I had a manager who was just awful and I didn't love really any aspects about it. And, you know, no offense to people in med device, it just wasn't for me. And so like, it was much easier to be like, screw the system. You know, I'm getting out of here. I'm going to go do my own thing. But then I ended up at Microsoft where like I had stuff that I've never had before. So, you know, the offer that they gave me, they effectively like 3x'd my salary and they were like, this is non-negotiable. And I was like, that's fine. I'll
accept that.
Yeah. And then on top of that, like they pay for my health insurance premiums and they give us $800 a year to go spend on fitness related stuff. And, you know, the time off is not really an issue and working from home is easy. And I'm working with all these amazing people. And so now all of a sudden I'm like, well, I hate the system, but like, this system isn't so bad. So where am I at on this? And especially having been there for so long, I never imagined myself staying somewhere for 5 years. It's crazy to even, you know, still say that out loud. But truly, like, the people that I worked with were amazing. I loved the work that I did there. And so it almost shifted from a point of desperation, like, I need to get out of the system because I'm so unhappy and this isn't fulfilling, to I actually really enjoy what I do. But what I've realized is that I'm working in the best place that I could possibly be, and I still feel like there's a piece missing. And so I can continue down this path and probably live a great life and, you know, have my 401k matched and, you know, do this, that, and the other thing, have the stability. But there's always going to be that little piece of me that's wondering, you know, what if, like, what if you had done this other thing? And so I felt like at the time that I decided to put in notice, things were in a really good place with the foundation of the business. Like, I had my LinkedIn following, I had a newsletter, I had everything, like, the site was in really good shape. And so the jump to turning it into like a real business that would bring in, you know, income and do all this stuff was not that far-fetched. And so whenever we're considering this, like, there's always going to be risk in starting your own thing, no matter what. But I felt like at that moment in time, the risk was just about as low as it could be. And every day that I continued to put off taking the leap was just another day that I was kind of robbing from future Austin, because if it worked out, then future Austin would be, you know, doing all the things that you do when your entrepreneurial venture works out. But if it didn't work out, then I would only just be delaying, you know, going back into the job search or finding something else to do. And so I figured I might as well take the leap now, because no matter what the outcome is, like, the earlier I start and the earlier I figure this out, the better off I'm going to be in the future and the easier things are going to be down the road. And so that's essentially the thought process behind the decision. But it was crazy. Like, the day that I put in notice, and the last year, like, I left in 2020. And so, you know, March 14th, we were in the office, and March 15th, we weren't. And like, everything shut down and everybody's remote. So I put in my notice remote. And like 5 minutes before I got on that call, I like burst into tears and like kicked down the door to my wife's room. And I was like, am I like making the worst mistake of my life? Like, why am I doing this? Blah, 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 blah. And she was like, no, it's okay. Like, this is probably natural to feel. And so I went ahead and I put in my notice, and then it was so strange. Like, even after, you know, I put in my notice and everything went well, and my manager was super nice about it, I had to go return my computer and all the stuff. And I walked into this office in Times Square. Times Square was empty. The office was empty. I was one of like two people in there, and I, you know, handed in my stuff and left. And that was like my exit from the corporate world, which is not what I imagined at all, right? Like, typically you say bye to all your colleagues and you get to do all that. And that wasn't a part of it. And so it was kind of a bittersweet exit. It wasn't necessarily how I would have drawn it up. But at the same time, I think the timing was right, and waiting just wouldn't have brought any additional benefit. So it was time to take the leap.
Sounds like you're a very calculated individual, Austin.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's cool to see how, you know, you brought future Austin into that, and you weighed all of your, you know, pros and cons to everything, you know, future, what would appease the future Austin and Austin now. And I think that's so important when we go through some of these decisions. And your exit story when you showed up, and I'm picturing that Will Smith gif from Fresh Prince of Bel-Air when he's in the room and no one's around and you're like, yeah, in your computer. I'm just like, that picture came to mind. I just had to share that. But you know, you went from medical device, and then you say you ended up at Microsoft. Okay, you don't just end up at Microsoft. You know, obviously this was the beginning of you developing this system that you have today. What were some of those challenges that you faced in transitioning without the traditional background that you were able to apply and then obviously build your business off of?
Definitely. So there are a lot of challenges, as you both know, all too well. But I think the major ones that really stand out is the fact that the traditional process is very unkind to people who are coming from a non-traditional background. And then even if you're able to work your way into some opportunity, there's always going to be a majority of people who are telling you, you know, thanks, but no thanks, because you don't have enough quote experience. And you sort of have to figure out a way around both of those. And I think to kind of define them more intentionally, the first thing you need to figure out is how do you start to get your foot in the door at these companies when your online application isn't being considered because somebody takes one look at it and they don't see any experience that's in your industry or in their industry. And so they immediately just assume you're not qualified. And then once you're in the door, you have to convince these people that you actually can do the job. And so those were the two really large hurdles that I had to overcome. But I think even before diving into that, like gaining some clarity on or providing some clarity around how I came to that conclusion might be helpful for some people out there because it can feel really frustrating. I remember when I was in college, or like I had all my resources, right? I had all my people I went to for advice. So, and this extends even before college, right? We all go to our parents, we go to our friends, we go to, you know, whoever is the de facto, you know, mentor for us. So that could be a teacher, that could be, you know, a career counselor in college, whatever that is. And we go to those people and we ask them, you know, hey, here's my situation. Can you help me? Like, what advice can you share? And those are the people that we trust for our entire career and or our entire life leading up to the point where we actually need to have a career. And then all of a sudden, it sort of falls apart when it comes to the actual job search process. And that's the first thing that I realized. So when I wanted to make this change, I went to my parents, I went to my friends, I went to Career Services Center, and I asked them, you know, what can I do here? How do I make this transition? And I'm surprised nobody laughed at me in the face. Like here I was, I had a 2.58 GPA. I'd failed a bunch of courses. I have a biology degree. I have a job in healthcare essentially, and I want to move into tech. And thankfully nobody laughed at me. Like we're referencing movies, Jim. Like I always go back to the Legally Blonde where they're like, you want to go to Harvard? And she's like, what? Like it's hard. Like, yeah, exactly. That's how I felt. And these people were kind enough to say, okay, well, here's what I would do. And what they gave me were all the steps of the traditional process. So that's essentially, you know, tweak your resume and cover letter, go out there and hit up the job boards every day, apply to dozens and dozens of these jobs, and then essentially cross your fingers and wait to hear it back. And so I did that because that's what we're used to. That's what we're taught. Like, hey, you have a question, you go ask your parents, your friends, career services, whoever it is for advice, they tell you and you go take action on it. So I applied to 100 jobs in the first month and I didn't hear anything back from those jobs. And that was super frustrating. So I went back to those same people and I basically said, you know, what gives? This is the process that you told me and it's not working. So, and to go even further back in our conversation, you know, I was told, as we all were, go to college, get good grades. Like you'll always have an opportunity. You'll always be able to get your foot in the door. And all of a sudden that was, you know, proving to not be true. So when I went back to the people and I asked them about it, they all came back to me and just said, you know, well, you haven't applied enough. You haven't, you know, it's a numbers game. And that's something I hear from a lot of our clients and people who come through our community, the fact that they're told it's a numbers game. And this should have been the first or the second big red flag for me because, you know, my parents hadn't job searched in forever. Like my mom was in finance. She'd been in her job for super long time. My dad was an entrepreneur. He hadn't job searched like for a super long time in any capacity. My friends were all in finance. Nobody had made this transition that I was trying to make, yet they were all telling me to do the same thing. And that should have been odd. Like that should have been something that I picked up on. And I knew something was off, but I wasn't quite sure what, and I didn't have another option. Like I didn't see anybody else out there on the internet or anywhere with a different system, a different approach. And so I said, all right, I'll try this for another month. And I essentially doubled down. I applied to 200 jobs for the next month. So we were at 300 total after 2 months. I ended up with like 5 interviews, which all of them came from like family friends. None of them came from the actual online applications, which is like what people were telling me to do. And I got 0 offers. Like all the people that I went in the door with told me the same thing we talked about, which was, hey, you know, you're really nice, but you don't have any experience. So like, sorry, but we're going to go with somebody else. And so that's when I knew I needed to find a different system. And at that point, I essentially just threw everything out the window and I tried to think about how I could go about this differently. And the biggest thing that I thought about, I just had this light bulb moment. One day I met an alumnus from Wake Forest for coffee And he basically said, like, Austin, you're talking to all the wrong people. Like, all these people that you're spending your time listening to and taking advice from, none of them have walked this path already. And being somebody who works in tech, like, I can tell you there's so many people who have non-traditional backgrounds. Like, why don't you go find people who have been where you are now and have achieved what you want to achieve? And that was really the major turning point in, I would say, everything. So I went home and I made this whole list of criteria, like, what do I want in a dream job? And I said, you know, I want to be working for these major tech companies. I want to be making, you know, six figures a year. I want to be living in New York or LA or a big city. And I want to be doing it all before the age of 26. And so I went out and I used LinkedIn to find a bunch of people who already checked all those boxes, who also came from a non-traditional background. And I just started reaching out to them. And through those conversations, I learned all of these different ways that other people had gone about solving for those two core issues that we talked about earlier. So basically what I learned was that 90% of the people that I spoke to had gotten in the door via a referral, which we all inherently know. But the thing that was the light bulb moment for me was the fact that many of the people who referred these folks in, like, there wasn't a pre-existing relationship there. So they essentially went out and they built relationships with strangers. But they talked about it so normally that it almost like gave me the confidence that I could do this too. And then the second thing was almost every single person I talked to found some sort of non-traditional way to illustrate their value. So maybe they created some sort of portfolio online, or maybe they had started creating content on Twitter or LinkedIn or something of that nature. Or maybe they started a portfolio, or they put together a pitch deck or a slide deck. But no matter what, they didn't just rely on a resume and a cover letter to get noticed. And so those are the two things that I internalized, and I kind of built my whole job search system around those two core components. And that system was the one that I used to eventually get in the door with, you know, I was interviewing at Google, Microsoft, and Twitter all at the same time. I ended up accepting the offer at Microsoft, and, you know, the rest is history. But it's definitely not easy out there for the non-traditional folks. So that's how I did it, Jim. I know you have a similar story, and you can probably chime in here with your advice as well, but that's how it worked for me.
Yeah. I think a big part of that is this just overarching theme of like taking control. You didn't just accept what people were telling you. You knew something was wrong and you went out and you found a way to fix it. And I think so many people, you know, myself included, sometimes we want to take control and then it's like a little bit of discouragement and you're not getting interviews or you're getting told, you know, you don't have the, and it's like, all right, you know, I'm done. So it's just encouraging to hear, you know, you look at this holistic view of what you had to do. And I think it's so important too, is the connection piece of it as a part of your system, that relationship building. It doesn't have to be, oh, I've known this person since grade school and they're going to get, you can build that relationship much like you talked about in a few post a few weeks ago, which thank you, by the way, for the shout out, but you can build that relationship. And what we find out is people genuinely want to help people. So if you can build enough of a relationship, prove your rap value, you're going to have a way in, you know, somewhere. And I think too, the part that made me think the hardest when I was in your system was, you know, those priorities, like what's the most important to you when it comes to a company, or, you know, what does a dream job look like to you, and ranking those things out. That was hard because a lot of people just aimlessly apply and think, okay, this is a cool company, I've heard of them, I'll apply. Oh yeah, they have cool benefits, I'll apply. But when you get down to the nitty gritty and you're able to really pinpoint what's most important to you, culture, product, you know, whatever it may be, salary, commute, that helps a ton to just kind of block out the other noise that is all these other companies that you obviously aren't going to belong in because of your priorities. And it gets you that narrow focus that, you know, that you had in your criteria. And it just helps a whole heck of a lot in scaling your search. So I think that part is really huge. And you know, why your system was so helpful was nailing that scope and getting me to see what I wanted in a dream job and what it was a dream company looked like.
I think also it's exhausting. Like, yeah. I didn't do it and I was exhausted. But
she did,
I could
apply
see it
for me in a few
places. Nice, nice. I love it. Outsourcing.
But first of all, that system in terms of ranking, this isn't where my question was going to go. I'm glad that you brought that up because there would be companies that he was like, oh, these check off a couple of the boxes. And then we would go through like an hour of reading all of the reviews on Glassdoor. Mm-hmm. And I'd be like, James,
I won't see you. We won't see you again. The whole point is so that we see you. Like, that's why we want to do this, because our kids don't see you. So I love that you integrated that and had them really focus on it, because that ended up helping us. And then the company he's at now really values our family time. Like, it's so important. And that's ultimately our number one and what we were looking for. And I hate, like, salary went way down on the list because we were like, right now we got to get our family together. So I'm glad that that was part of it. What I actually was going to ask you about was, well, first of all, I see a tremendous amount of fortitude in you. And like, for you to go through almost 300 applications and then say, I'm actually going to change the whole system, shows that, like, not, you're not just a hard worker. Like, your mentality is driven and you're capable and you want to make change. And that now that you've even turned that into saying, I want to help other people do this, it is just amazing. I mean, we have seen the benefit of it from your system. So that's awesome that you're still doing that. And I love your content. Like, it's great. A lot of it doesn't apply to me, like in my career and whatnot, but I see people comment and I think that's wonderful. Your fortitude and how you've, you know, been driven. In order to achieve such things, you have to have a support system, right? So I know you said you're married, and you talked about your family and your friends for a little bit. Who and what is your primary support system?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's hands down my wife, Lily. Like, she is the rock behind all of this. And that's, it's an interesting progression from, you know, job search to entrepreneurship when it comes to the types of things that you worry about and think about and the concerns that you have. But even so, going back to like the job search, you know, I was applying to all these places and working on the referrals and getting in the door. And even with Microsoft, I remember, like, I so badly wanted to work at Google that I almost removed myself from the Microsoft interview process because I told Lily, like, I just want to focus on Google. And like, if I work at Microsoft, I don't think like I'll have the opportunity to work at Google later, which is, doesn't make any sense. I can't even rationalize like why I said that. But for some reason, that was like a thought in my head. And she pushed me to keep going with that. And, you know, the rest is kind of history there. But even more so than the job search, I mean, throughout the entrepreneurial journey, there's so many ups and downs. And I think people do a disservice to anybody who wants to start their business when they post on LinkedIn about how, you know, oh, I'll help you quit your 9-to-5 and you'll own your time and your freedom and you'll have unlimited earning potential and all this stuff. And like, that's true. But what people don't tell you is, like, you know, when things are going well and you're having a good day, then the little voice like pops up in your ear and they're like, but what if you get canceled on LinkedIn? Like, what if somebody views something that you said as like X, Y, and Z, and they spin it the wrong way, and all of a sudden LinkedIn's gone, and then your business is screwed, but now you can't get a job because, you know, you said this thing and it's out there in the public and like all this. And I haven't even said anything, but like, that's like where my anxiety goes. And so, you know, when you have a company, you can say like, well, you know, I show up every day, I do my job, I get my paycheck, you know, I have my benefits and I do all that. And as an entrepreneur, that's not necessarily the case. Like, if I'm not, like, I have systems in place, but if I'm not working, then the business isn't working. And, you know, I'm constantly worried about what happens if my following totally disappears overnight. And what happens if, you know, we launch this thing and it totally fails and all of a sudden the stakes are higher. Like, yeah, I have a larger following and a larger community now, but now when I do something, like, I don't have that same mindset of when I'm starting out and I'm like, oh, this will be fun. Like, nobody cares. And like, this can be a learning experience for my audience. Like, there's almost these expectations that like, oh, Austin should, you know, crush this because like he's crushed everything else. And is much of that self-inflicted? 100%. But, you know, this is just my story as well and my perspective. And I think other people have different stories and different perspectives. But getting back to the question, like, Lily has been there through all of it. So she has been, you know, we've gone for hour long walks where we spend the whole time like discussing all of this and dissecting things. And she's talking me through my anxiety and all of that. But she's been the most consistent one through everything, the ups and the downs. And I certainly would not be here without her. So yeah, that is, she's the one for sure.
That's great. Hey, what are some tips you have for people as far as dealing with that anxiety? I know I just had a conversation with a colleague not too long ago about, you know, pressure and putting too much pressure on yourself. And a lot of what you're saying, you know, stems from that. How do you handle that?
It's a great question. So the first thing I'll say is it's still 100% a struggle, like pretty consistently. I mean, I wouldn't say daily, but definitely like multiple days of the week, there are, you know, I'm feeling anxious about something. And there are multiple ways that I've gone about this. So first, I have a therapist that I work with who's fantastic. And I like recommend therapy to everybody. Like all my friends are like, oh, I'm dealing with this. And I'm like, dude, go talk to somebody. Or like anybody who I'm like coaching or anything else. Like, I think that having somebody to speak to who isn't personally invested, like a partner, a spouse, a family member, like having somebody who's objective and also is trained to dig a little deeper is so beneficial for so many reasons. So, you know, one, you have somebody to talk to, and sometimes you just need to talk it out. But two, getting a deeper understanding of yourself and like where these stories are coming from can really help you understand the root of them and can help you deal with them a little bit better. And so for me, like I think every book I've read and every podcast I've listened to and every resource I've gone down where this conversation comes up, like it seems to always go back to childhood for some reason. And so, I mean, y'all have kids. We have Nolan, who's just about 7 months. And now like the thing I'm most anxious about is like, how do I not like totally screw up my kid? Like, I just want him to be like, be happy. But I see so much of it. Like, my therapist will be like, well, do you think that this thing that you're feeling might be related to this thing that you told me about that happened earlier on? And I'm like, oh yeah, like I never even thought about that. And so being able to unpack that and just get a deeper understanding, like awareness is powerful, right? Like if we don't know something is happening, then we can't fix it or we can't dive deeper. So it's definitely uncomfortable. Like, it's not easy to talk about some of this stuff. It's not easy to admit to yourself that maybe some of the ways that you are because of this. And just even like with me, something that I found interesting is like one of the things that's led to all of the success that I've seen stems from something that caused me a lot of pain like earlier on in life. And I don't think it's fair to like call out the person who was sort of the instigator of that. But for me, like, I'm always trying to prove this person wrong. And this person was always saying like, oh, you need to have a passion, or, you know, you're not working hard enough, or like, why is this, that, and the other thing not happening? And now, like, that's the reason that I am where I am. But it continues to be a negative because nothing is enough then. And so I'm like, I hit 1 million followers on LinkedIn. And I'm like, I mean, we cursed earlier, so maybe I can curse, but I'm basically like, fuck you, I'm gonna get to 2 million. And like, I'm gonna do, you know, this, that, and the other thing. And so it's very interesting to recognize that something that's such a core part of you and responsible for all this great stuff that you've seen is also like rooted in something not so great and continues to be a problem as well. So just unpacking all that with therapists is huge. The other thing that I found that's maybe more accessible and helpful is that like 99% of issues and problems stem from boundary setting. And so what I think a lot of us do a bad job of is setting boundaries that we feel are true to ourselves. So, you know, for, you know, on the personal side, we say yes to all of these activities with friends and family, even though we want to say no to maybe half of them or more, depending on, you know, what the situation is. In business or at work, we say yes to a lot of these things because we don't want to miss out on the promotion or the potential upside of meeting with this person or whatever it is. And what I found is that just being honest with people and setting these boundaries that are good with me, that's been a game changer. 100% I've like quote missed out on things, but my mental health has drastically improved when I've started to say no to stuff and when I've had a system in place. And the interesting thing that I found is that like, as I've kind of grown with my community, first, you know, I was saying yes to everybody. And then I had to start with saying no to strangers. And that was easy. And then I had to start saying no to people who were, you know, a little further down the path. Maybe they were, you know, I knew their name, I knew their face, you know, they were just commenting on my stuff, whatever. And then I had to start saying no to like actual friends. And then I had to start saying no to people who I considered to be like in my inner, you know, circle, like my meaningful network. And it just gets harder, like as you go through that process, because you care more about these people, you don't want to disappoint them. But what I found is actually when I'm able to say no to something that I don't want to do, I'm able to be a better, you know, insert relationship to this person here. I'm able to be a better partner. I'm able to be a better friend, you know, whatever that looks like. And then also we sort of teach people how to treat us. So people just come to expect that, you know, oh, like also like my, all my friends know that I go to bed at like 9 p.m. They all stay up late. They all do their thing. And like, even if we're out bachelor party weekend, whatever, like maybe not nine, but like I'm the first one in bed. Like I'm 100% sleeping, and they just know it. But I wake up early and I make everybody breakfast. And like, that's just how we roll. But when you set these boundaries with other people, it's going to feel uncomfortable at first. And I think starting with small baby steps is the way to go. And you ease into it. But I think what you'll find is when you feel empowered to say no to something that you don't want to do, you create all this space to say yes. And that's kind of the key piece that got me to really invest or kind of take the leap, is that my therapist asked me, she was like, when you say yes to something, like what else are you saying no to? And that's something that I hadn't considered before, because it's like, okay, if I say yes to this talk that somebody might pay me $2,000 for, and it's at 8 p.m. or 7 p.m., let's say, but I'm missing out on, you know, Nolan's bath time, or, you know, Lily's had a hard week and I'm missing out on supporting her, like, is that worth it? And in some cases it is. I'm giving one of those talks tomorrow, but in some cases it's not. And I would say no to that. Like I've said no to many of those types of opportunities in the past, just because I know that I'm going to be more anxious. Other people are going to be more anxious. I'm saying no to a lot of other things that are important to me by saying yes to this specific thing that at the end of the day isn't really super important to me. So I think those are the two biggest pieces of advice that I can offer. With the caveat that by no means do I have it figured out. Like, this is still something that I work on every day.
Thank you so much for being vulnerable and sharing that information. I love your boundary setting. James and I are working on that actually actively. And we have kids to thank for that, actually. It actually makes it easier for us to
set. So much easier.
Yes. We're like, well, there's bedtime. Like, you know, we got to say no. But then it actually makes us to say, you know what? This past weekend, he wanted to go golfing and at the simulators. And I'm like, you know what? You go do that. I'll take it this time. And then some other day we'll switch. So the kids actually make it easier for you to balance, even though there's so much imbalance with children, right? Mm-hmm. And the more you have, the crazier it gets. But actually, the more you have, the easier it is to say no when, you know, you need to, and you have your priorities set in straight. So I'm really glad that you touched on that topic. Well, we're at this time and you shared a lot of information with us. So it's kind of hard to tell you what advice would you give up on which topic. So I'll leave it up to you in regards to what is your top piece of advice that you give maybe the people that are following you, or even the friends and family that are struggling with things that you just talked about, your anxiety, for example.
Yeah, I think that the two best things that anybody can do, like no matter what your goals are to, one, get started and just like take it one small step at a time and focus on the daily actions and activities that you can focus on and that are reasonable. So I think, you know, so many people don't do X, right? They don't make that career change, or they don't work to improve their mental health, or they don't start creating content or start a business because of so many different reasons that keep all that in their head. So it's, you know, I've tried doing what everybody else has said and it's not working, or, you know, this just doesn't seem feasible. How could I ever do this? Or what if people judge me? You know, any of these self-limiting beliefs that we put on ourselves keep so many folks from getting started. And so like, that's the best advice across the board, is to simply like, just do it, like just take an action. And it doesn't have to be like, if you want to, you know, start creating content, like instead of writing a full post, like write the first sentence of one post. If you want to make a career change and you're terrified of networking, like instead of sending an email to a stranger, like maybe just draft up an email. And then the next day, maybe you send it to somebody who's in your meaningful network that you're more comfortable with. And you go from there. Like, just start with these baby steps. And what I would say is the best thing that you can do as you move forward is to figure out the activities that are bringing you the biggest results, and just focus on doing those things and do them daily. So if that's, you know, I'm seeing a lot of traction for my mental health when I journal every day. And so I'm not going to miss that. Like every day I'm going to journal for 15 minutes, or I'm starting to see a lot of traction on this social platform when I engage with X, Y, and Z people. So I'm going to do that every day and I'm not going to miss it. Or, you know, I'm starting to see a lot of traction when I engage with strangers when I network with them in this capacity. So I'm going to do that with five people every day and I'm not going to miss it. When you focus in on those specific things, it's kind of, I don't know if you guys have read Atomic Habits by James Clear, but he basically talks about like systems over goals. And that's essentially what this is. Like, we can have an overarching goal and that's great, but it's really, it comes down to the daily systems, the daily actions that we take that move us forward. And I think we have to understand that no matter what we want to do, like whether it's mental health or changing a job or starting a podcast or a business, like, it's going to take a long time. It's a marathon. Like, it's a slow build. And so rather than trying to sprint the whole thing, like, if we just accept that and we take small, impactful steps every single day, like, that's really where the magic is going to start to happen. And so if putting the pressure on yourself of like, hey, I need to make this big leap in order to actually do this, if that's something that you're doing, like, give yourself permission to say no to that and just say, okay, I'm going to take one small step tomorrow and that's me getting started. And then I'm just going to take one step every day. And you're going to make so much more progress taking one step every day than you would have taking zero steps, right? Especially, you know, as the time horizon extends. So I think that would be what I would share with folks. And hopefully a couple of people listening will go take that one action.
Yeah, that is very actionable advice. Thank you for sharing that. And thank you again for taking the time out of your busy day. You know, I can't recommend Austin and Cultivated Culture and the Dream Job System enough. Just some great tools using Austin's experience with LinkedIn and him helping you build a LinkedIn profile and all the tools with the resumes that you can use. It's just an awesome portfolio of tools that you can use. And of course, you have Austin's genius mind behind it all that you can reach out to at any time. So Austin, where can some people reach you at?
Yeah, a whole bunch of places. I mean, LinkedIn is kind of the bread and butter that I do every day. I also have my own podcast called the Dream Job System Podcast. And I just got started on Twitter actually today. I published my first tweet and I had 9 followers when we started today. So I'm wading into the waters of uncertainty with a new channel here. So we'll see how that goes.
Be curious to see how you cater your content to Twitter with the limitations of characters and whatnot, because your posts are pretty lengthy, right?
I'm adjusting. It's taken some work and it's taken some intentionality, but I knocked out this week. I wrote 60 tweets. So we'll see.
Oh my goodness.
How many are going to do well? Well, writing 60 tweets is one thing. Writing 60 tweets that like actually move the needle is another. So we'll see like where on that spectrum we fall, but it's going to be fun either way.
Awesome. Congratulations. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for tuning in to today's Your Detour episode. If you liked this episode, rate, review, you know what to do. Find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. We hope you can tune in next time, but until then, take care of yourself.